Hey, America!
Start listening now!
Oh, hey, Danny's here.
Ooh.
You heard my voice.
Yes. Yeah. All right. It's 1987, everyone. Put on your 1987 clothes, your Minnesota Twins World Series gear, and we're going to hop in to the soothing sounds of Ronald Reagan. Go! Welcome to another Reaganomical episode of 12 Points from America, a Eurovision Song Contest podcast from America, the country with lasers and girders and geometric shapes. I'm Eric.
I'm Derek.
I'm Samantha.
And I'm Danny. Hey. I'm so glad that the 12 points are going to trickle down this week.
There are points being given out, let me tell you.
So many.
Ooh.
Such much.
Oh, you know, we have the girders and the lasers and the geometric shapes, but I feel like that was just a worldwide concept at that point. I don't know, like Nauru had those in 1987. Zimbabwe had them in 1987. Paraguay had them. It was worldwide. No one could stop it.
Real popular.
I like to believe the ozone layer, like the hole in the ozone literally happened because of the height of hair in the 80s.
And I'm just so happy that I was too young to be subjected to that. Like, I feel like my own personal cloud of hairnet, if I were in my teens back in the 80s, I feel like I would still be like expectorating it from my lungs right now. Cause
yeah.
Dear God,
it's accumulated there. Just like asbestos.
Yes.
Like mesothelioma, but for everyone who used Aquanet.
Oh, what a time. Hey, what a time.
Yeah. Folks, thanks for tuning in to such. This is our show. If you're tuning in from the pod crawl, welcome. Seriously, we're so glad you're here, and I'm very sorry. if the title of the show didn't tip you off, we're from America.
Wait, what? I thought I was Canadian this entire time.
You're so right about that.
Yeah. No. We're here. We're. I'm not.
Yeah, the four of us, if you don't know who we are four friends who are basically all based in the Twin Cities area, the metropolitan area near Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota. This is now episode 264. So you've come in really, you know, right as we're hitting our prime, I suppose. But yeah, we are a group of friends who come together to talk about the world's favorite musical competition with a lot of trivia. Voice.
No, shut up. Sam, continue.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, so it's just a lot of trivia, a lot of history, and a lot of just dunking on each other and giving each other crap as if we were just standing around a dinner table, just, you know, being us. And we appreciate everybody who's joined us along the ride since we started this podcast back in 2019. God, it's been 2019. But yes, if you are just hearing about us for the first time through the pod crawl, welcome, welcome, welcome. If you have no idea what the heck this pod crawl is, then, you know, skip back to last episode where we kind of talked about it a little bit. But just as a quick primer, we have already heard ESC Insight talking about France in 1959, the Wind Machine podcast, our friends in Australia covering Austria in 1976. Our friends at EuroWhat, another American Eurovision podcast, covered the Yugoslav hosted competition in 1990. And last time around, Neil Points talked about Latvia hosting in 2003. Now it is our turn. After us, you'll be able to follow the party over to that Eurovision site covering Denmark in 1964 and the 12 Points podcast covering Azerbaijan hosting in 2012. These are all contests held in countries that are hosting it for the first time ever. And how did each of these countries put their own stamp on it? If you're wondering what a pod crawl is in general, our friends over at ESC Insight, Ewan just put together a great little article summing up what we're trying to do over what's generally a long, boring, quiet summertime with no real news. So thanks for letting us occupy your time. Good times.
And that's it. Thanks to everyone who... No, we did want to touch on... We're talking about 1987. We're talking about the year Twins first won the World Series. And there was also a Eurovision that year. And I was just curious. I just looked this up. The day of this contest, you know what the number one song in the U.S. was?
1987. Okay.
Are you about to Rickroll us?
Is this...
No.
Let me guess. Extreme. be with you. Is that it?
That's Mr. Big, man. Come on.
Oh, God. Who, yeah, what's an Extreme dude?
Extreme did More Than Words, didn't they?
Oh, my God. Those are the same goddamn song.
Okay, well, fine. no, it was... So we were about to have a decent run by With or Without You by U2. Okay. But the week of this contest, it was I Just Died in Your Arms.
Hell yeah! Okay, better song. Better song. Better band than U2.
That's fighting words. That's fighting words.
Ireland won enough this year, clearly.
Yeah. We will get to that.
What do we need to get to first? We have a little bit of discussion about... We love Junior Eurovision here, and we think you should as well. We do have a little bit of news from that. Do we have any other news as well?
Not a ton of news from the actual contest, but we have this thing where we put out an episode during this quiet period of summer saying, oh, nothing's going on. And then immediately after we hit stop record, something interesting happens. We are waiting on news basically any day now of what the host city for Austria in 2026 is going to be. It's either going to be Innsbruck or it's going to be Vienna. They got it down to two. We'll find out any day now. My money's on Vienna, but I could have just met a Barzilai curse this, so who the heck knows?
We're just going back to Vienna. Yeah.
Fine by me. Great city. I know where to get a good kebab and a good coffee. That's all I need.
But will Vienna have enough picturesque places? I feel like whenever I hear about Vienna, it's what people say, is that just doesn't look old enough. Doesn't look interesting enough.
And those people have accidentally found themselves in Bratislava.
No, is there a Vienna in Texas, except it's pronounced Vienna or something?
Yeah, Vienna. Jeez.
Yeah.
Look, we in Minnesota commit our own sins. We have the suburb of New Prague.
Not to mention Montevideo.
Montevideo,
God,
yeah.
Love it. God, you love it.
And Nimrod.
That is something I truly do love about upper Midwest town names. Which led to one of my favorite actual headlines of all time. It was unfortunately talking about a very sad car accident that happened in near two rural communities out in the sort of Minnesota, North Dakota kind of area.
Oh, I know where this is going.
Oh, it was the classic headline, Fertile Woman Dies Near Climax.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Yes. Oh, I miss Climax, Minnesota. It's almost as good as it's not embarrassment, is it? It's embarrassed.
Embarrassed
Minnesota. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Okay,
what is the junior? What is the junior Eurovision news, though?
Basically, Spain has announced their artists. It's 14-year-old Gonzalo Pinillos representing the country. We don't have a song yet, but like I said, this time of year, we appreciate every scrap of news that comes from either junior or senior. But we have another name added to the roster, which is great.
Excellent.
Yeah, we also had some sort of Eurovision adjacent news. Kind of, again, a sad note here. The namesake of the Sylvia Young Theater School,
Sylvia Knight. Oh, my bad.
Shining so bright. Sylvia Young died this July, age of 85. She, like I said, Sylvia Young Theater School, which might not mean a ton to a lot of people, but counted among its alumni are some of like the great and the good of the British pop and acting scene of our generation. Amy Winehouse, Daniel Kaluuya, Billy Piper for the Doctor Who fans, Dua Lipa, Baby Spice, Emma Bunton, Nicholas Holt, Rita Ora, Leona Lewis, the actress who just played Queen Charlotte in the Charlotte spinoff of Bridgerton, India Amartafio, James Lance, who played Trent Crim in Ted Lasso, members of Little Mix, All Saints, McFly, Busted, and Eurovision alumni Jade Ewan, Javine Hilton, and Samantha Janis, as well as her own daughter, Frances Ruffell, who was the original Eponine in the West End and Broadway productions of Les Mis, and also represented the UK at Eurovision in 1994. So a lot of mid-90s to early 2000s Eurovision connections, and frankly, the person who helped Amy Winehouse become who Amy Winehouse was. So I thought that was an interesting little bit of...
That is interesting.
Yeah. So
that's too bad.
Yeah. So Vale, mm-hmm. Sylvia Young, thanks for giving us what you gave us and who you gave us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, RIP, but did you have to besmirch her memory by mentioning McFly?
And Busted. I mean, McBusted together.
Yeah. It's not better.
I don't know. Some people like chocolate, some people like peanut butter, and some people like chocolate and peanut butter together. We have British listeners. I'm sure some of them are loving the nostalgia right now.
I don't know what's going on right now. But that's
just
okay.
smile and nod. It's okay.
Smile and nod. Can we just bomb right into 1987? I'm gonna steep myself in the aforementioned hairspray and the neon and the god geometric lights. You know, sometimes we like I can be annoyed sometimes that people just think that all of the 80s looked like this, but unfortunately sometimes we just get a document that is like an insect in amber, and it really is just exactly the way we make fun of the 80s, and that is exactly what this contest looks like. I can't believe it.
It reminded me of those backgrounds that you would see in people's school yearbook photos with the laser background. Oh yeah. I'm pretty sure I had that. I had that in the early 90s, certainly. No front teeth, but I had a laser background. Yes.
Aww. Yeah. It even goes down to the logo of this thing. I mean,
it is
this looks like the logo of the, you know, in season 3 of Stranger Things, they opened the mall. It's like I'm sure somebody knows the name
that's
of that.
It. That's so it. We made fun of this, the one that Switzerland hosted. What was that, 89 or 90?
89.
We made fun of that as looking like a word processor shortcut on your desktop for your Windows 95 PC. But man, this one really is just like...
It's the logo for that mall.
For that mall. Starlight Mall.
Starlight Mall, thank you.
87, it's so high concept that it is... I think we're glossing over the fact that it's ugly. That it's extremely ugly and looks like hell. But I mean, like, enough about the aesthetics. We'll have enough to like individually make fun of every single person who took part in this concept. Johnny Logan not accepted. So
I mean, I was going to say, like, 1980s style is kind of coming back into fashion, isn't it? Like,
we're big on 90s right now. You know, we know it's those baggy cargo pants.
All right, I was gonna say, like, should we brace ourselves for this aesthetic coming back and being part of the vision?
Very tall, hairsprayed hair and like tutu style skirts. I don't want it. I don't want it.
No,
men rolling up their white blazers. I would rather die.
Okay, where's your sense of fun, Danny? All right. So as we said, this is Eurovision 1987, Belgium's first and so far only time hosting. Again, so far. May 9th of 1987, held at the Centenary Palace in Brussels. From what I understand, within sight of the Atomium, if you know Brussels well.
You know what else is within sight? The Atomium.
Mini Europe. We can't get into another mini Europe hole. Everyone just Google mini Europe.
The hell we can't.
And that's good.
Okay.
What do we got here? The only time they've ever hosted.
Belgium only one time. Sandra Kim back in 86 with Je me lève, French language winner, so Walloon, which honestly brings up the huge question, and this is a question that really only comes up with Belgium. As we know now, the Belgian broadcasters switch off between the Flemish broadcaster and the Walloon broadcaster in terms of who gets to represent the country, the French speakers or the Dutch speakers. There was a whole ton of drama when it came to the creation and the organization and the hosting of Eurovision 87. And I'm going to go off on a academically backed rant here. I actually did find an academic article from 2019.
Are you Lindsay Ellis? Anyway, go on.
I have to cite this because credit all goes to Julie Kalman over at Monash University over in Australia, who wrote a fantastic chapter in her book, Which Belgium Won Eurovision, European Unity and Belgian Disunity. Highly recommend that you look it up. It fleshes everything out. And it just kind of goes into Belgian identity, the Flemish, the Walloon. Everybody forgets about the German-speaking minority there. But basically, in a nutshell, when Belgium first entered Eurovision, there was one broadcaster with two linguistic sides, the French and the Dutch/Flemish speakers. And they had decided early on that if ever Belgium was to win the contest, that hosting it would be a equal 50-50 cooperation between the two sides. However, by 1960, those two broadcasters had started to split, and there had been more and more increasing divisions between the Flemish and the Walloon sides of Belgium. So when Sandra Kim won, it was Walloon. It was French-speaking, Je me lève. And so the Walloons were like, okay, this is a win for Wallonia. And they basically grabbed the reins of putting this all together and kind of left the Flemish speakers in the dust. They tried to come up with a compromise. The Flemish were like, okay, the best possible location for this would be in Antwerp, which is on the Flemish side of Belgium. The Walloons were like, no, it's going to be Brussels or nothing. And they more or less just announced that it was going to be held in Brussels. The Flemish broadcaster was so ticked off about it, they basically threw their toys out of the pram and refused to be part of the arrangement of the actual show, which is why there was so much more French Belgium presentation. Like, if you look at the postcards, if you looked at the actual, there was more French, very, very little Walloon, even though more Flemish. You see, even I'm getting this mixed up. There is a Flemish speaking majority in Belgium. It's about like a 60-40, give or take. And yet Walloon representation was so much more. This is all completely separate from the fact that the Walloon broadcaster did not have the opportunity to actually select the artist. That was all the Flemish. That was all the Dutch speakers. So you had basically two broadcasters going head to head in terms of who gets to host it, who gets to pick the artist. And somehow the show came out cohesively. But there was a lot of political back and forth behind the scenes. And it's actually a really, really fascinating article. I again recommend Julie Kalman's article, Which Belgium Won Eurovision, if you want to learn more about this, because she did a heck of a job really putting all this together.
Can I share a brief snippet about Sandra Kim that I found while looking at this? I know this is, she's not in the contest we're talking about.
Kind of, sort of was.
She was there because she handed the thing from herself to Johnny, what's his name? But she's the youngest winner of all time. She was 13.
That's right.
Which is not a thing that they allow anymore.
No. Yeah.
Which is probably good. But what I didn't know was there was some thought that the song that she sang, J'aime la vie, implied she was older than that. That she was actually 15 or something like that. Apparently, the Swiss delegation of all people took exception to this mischaracterization of her age to the point where they argued she should have been disqualified.
Wow.
Switzerland caring about somebody's identity?
It was a different time. Let me tell you.
If she would have opened,
and then they're
the
like, "Oh, well, if we're going to do that, we're going to have
Credit Suisse." They wouldn't have cared.
Yeah, we're gonna have a Swiss representative who's actually Canadian. What are they going to do? Anyway, I just think that's wild. That of all countries, Switzerland was like, "Well, hang on."
Yeah, at this point, there was no age restriction. It was just the mischaracterization that they were so ticked off about.
Yep. Exactly. Anywho.
Just wait until they get a whiff of this band that insisted that they were all penguins and dads.
To be fair, that was 1980.
Yeah, well, Switzerland was still there.
You're telling me they didn't actually lose the Battle of Waterloo? This is BS. All right.
All right. We do have a lot of this contest to get through, including some notable stuff. Not the least of which being the return of Ireland's greatest twink, Johnny Logan.
And to be fair, we also did go very much into Johnny Logan's back catalog and his whole.
Oh, yeah. We have an old episode on Johnny Logan. He's a noteworthy presence enough to merit his own episode.
Episode 222, if you'd like to go back into the 12 Points from America archives. So
no episodes on twinks yet, though.
That was, well, it's a Eurovision show. I mean, which of the episodes aren't about twinks? And you can find that list at. before we dive into this contest itself, can we talk for just a moment about Terry Wogan?
Always.
It's half of this contest, yeah.
In terms of the source we have on YouTube, a lot of folks watch this contest without any Terry Wogan whatsoever. But if you try to find it now, there's a decent chance you will hear the soothing dulcet tones of former Irish president, I believe, Terry Wogan.
God.
In the hearts of many.
So if you don't know, he hosted, he provided commentary.
Commentated, yeah.
Starting in the 1970s. Was a little bit off and on then. And then starting in around 1980, did every contest for almost 30 years. You can really tell his patience. If you listen to like later ones in certain moments, you can start to kind of see when his patience starts wearing thin with the fact that this is his job. And he's sort of a polarizing figure in Eurovision world. Sam, you're our resident encyclopedia of this sort of thing. What is your view of this guy?
I mean, for so many people in the United Kingdom or other places where they would get his commentary, he was the voice of Eurovision. People grew up with those dulcet tones. And there was a begrudging love of the contest, but I think as time kept going, you could tell that his tiredness, his sometimes off-color cheeky commentary, I feel like it may have influenced a generation, even more than a generation, almost two generations worth of UK viewers into seeing Eurovision less as, you know, what we love it as, and a little bit more of a joke and a bit more politicized than it actually is. I often recognize that I see the contest with very rose-colored glasses, as much as I make fun of it, but it's all with love. And I feel like there was an aspect of, oh, look at what those silly non-Brits are doing, that I would often see echoed in other more casual fans of Eurovision. So I recognize his place. I prefer Graham, who I think his successor, who approaches the contest with a little bit more of a genuine love, you know, understands the ridiculousness of the contest that we all love, but there's a little bit less of the snark. Mm-hmm. Or the glass of Bailey's after song number 9, which is sort of Terry's trademark.
There are a couple of zings that he's capable of that are still kind of all-timers.
Oh,
from
yeah,
this episode.
He made me laugh multiple times when watching this.
Dry. Half of it is just how dry it is. I mean, occasionally he'll just like make a really unnecessary comment about how sexy a singer is.
Yep.
But then other times he'll just be like, this singer received a rather nasty shock just before going on stage, and then you see her hair. Yeah.
To be fair, if it's who I'm thinking of Kate,
it was Norway. Yeah.
Song number 1.
Yeah. That's how we start this thing though.
Yeah.
Then right as voting starts, she comes out and he's like, here are those earrings I was telling you about. Take me to your leader.
Oh, he said that in such a way too.
It was like, it was the most natural reply. It was beautiful.
Yeah, the number of comments on women's outfits and appearances got a little bit weird.
It's regular. It's so freaky.
It's 90, it's the 80s. It's the late 80s.
And a lot of this stuff can be right or wrong, chalked up to it being, quote, a different time. I understand that. I will also note, to his credit, one of the things that jumped out to me was that he noted that he lamented that Portugal had never won.
Yes,
and that they'd never come close.
And he said he's a sucker for the Portuguese entries. You know, the man had some taste.
I think he really did have an appreciation for this. I just think as he got older and he saw, if he saw Eurovision as sort of a reflection of the world as it is, it started to feel... I'm not going to speak for him. He's also dead, by the way. that it started to feel less and less familiar to him, and it seemed out of touch. He made some comments towards the end of his life about Conchita Wurst and a couple of other things. They're very, very old guy, old man yells at cloud sort of things. I also just as this goes on, I talked about how like the comments getting worse and things like that. I think there's something to about being sort of cynical about Eurovision. God knows we make fun of this all the time. Mm-hmm. But there's cynical, and then there's just bitterness. And at some point, I feel like kind of crossed over into that all the way to the point where in 2007, he apparently deliberately announced the wrong winner of the national selection.
I don't know if it was deliberate, but it definitely did happen Cindy versus Pooch. Yeah.
There was a comment that was like, it wasn't a technical error. Let's put it that way.
Oh.
And then in 2008, that was his last one. Dima Bilan won for Russia, and he basically crashed out. And it seemed like the farther east the contestants went, the less happy he was about it.
Yeah.
Whatever reason, it just seemed like, what happened to the Eurovision that I loved or something? I don't know. I also just want to note, this is the best thing about Terry Wogan, is that he had his Waluigi over in Ireland named Larry Gogan.
What?
You didn't know this?
I don't think I knew about this.
So in 1987, at least, you had Terry Wogan for the UK and a guy named Larry Gogan for Ireland.
And for RTE.
I just think that's beautiful.
Wait, is this a real person? Is this like a...
I'm not. No, this isn't a joke.
Okay.
It wasn't just the puppet Terry Wogan that we at ESC Insight had for a couple of years.
Well, okay. I should know. Marty Whelan was on RTE 1. RTE FM 3, so their radio guy, was Larry Gogan. It's on the first ever disc on RTE's Radio 2, which was, by the way, Like Clockwork by the Boomtown Rats.
Well, okay.
Bob Geldof sucks. Anyway, let's that's enough. Let's get into the contest. My first question going into this was, how soon am I going to see the Mannequin Piece, and how soon am I going to see a Tintin reference? They were both in the first postcard.
There we go. Yes.
Yep.
And then we got to the hair, as was mentioned. How do we want to do this? There were 22 songs. This is the biggest Eurovision ever to that point. Oh, how young and innocent we were.
I mean, I don't think we have enough time to really go through absolutely every single song, because, like I said, 22 songs, and we only have so much time here. We've already commented on Norway's hair. Should we move over to song number two, which I believe was a song that, when we were discussing, you know, off mic, Danny said that he had opinions on the Israeli song, Shir HaBalanim, the Lazy Bum song by Dotner and Kushner, a song that supposedly, according to urban legend, when it was chosen, the Minister of Culture of Israel was so incensed by the selection that he had threatened to resign altogether over it. Danny, what do you think about the Lazy Bums?
Oh, it's the stupidest song that's been at Eurovision in a long, long time. This is, oh my God. I could go for 20 minutes, but I'll just sum it up as, these guys need to stop jumping around. These guys need to, I don't know, sing something that's not so brainless and annoying. It's 1987 Tel Aviv's answer to Benson Boone. That's all. These guys need to, as soon as they are done singing their stupid little part of the song, they just go behind the other guy who keeps singing, and then they're just like doing handstands. Just, I don't know.
I mean, the comparison that immediately came to mind to me is Espresso Macchiato. Weirdly
enough. Yeah, which also sucked. Third place. I'm still mad.
All right, to be fair, I'm still a little bit mad about that.
I was thinking somewhere out there was a young girl who was like, I booked those guys for my bat mitzvah, and there they are.
Something came up.
I mean, the Blues Brothers were a hit, certainly, and I kind of appreciate it. What's that, Derek?
Terry Wogan did call him out on that.
Yes, he did. Mm-hmm. But I tend to like it when a country does something completely offbeat. They perform the heck out of it. They sang it pretty decently. And there is, you know, there is fun in a year where there were a lot of ballads and a lot of sort of mid-tempo. They dared to do something. It sticks out for sure. Yes.
In the death slot. I don't know if that was really a thing at that point. A lot of I don't know.
With 22 entrants, I think that it definitely feels like it.
Possibly, yeah. Oh, speaking of like modern parlance, in terms of how we talk about Eurovision now, a thing that I really wasn't expecting, and this was right out of the gate, Terry Wogan made a mention of betting on.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, he did.
Didn't get into like the numbers or anything. I don't know if we even knew those, but he had said basically the betting markets, however they were at that point, were favoring Denmark, Germany, United Kingdom, maybe Ireland. Ireland feels confident, but that wasn't one of the ones that he mentioned.
Right.
Which is interesting in hindsight.
I mean, Germany came in second place. Denmark came in fifth. The UK came in 13th, which was a failure by UK standards at the time.
Well, that's because everyone hates the UK. That's the other thing about Terry Wogan.
He's
convinced that, like, and especially like, and this particularly became an issue like once the UK got into the Iraq War and things like that. Anytime the UK did poorly at Eurovision, it was because everyone hates them.
God only knows what he would have said.
You decide. I don't know.
Yeah. God only knows what he would have said if he were still commentating / alive when Brexit was becoming a big.
Oh my God.
He would have voted for Brexit.
Oh. shall we roll on to our next song?
Sure,
yeah.
All right. Gary Lux in spot number three, a previous returning contestant. He'd sang previously in 1983 and 85. He'd done backing vocals in 84. He'd come back in 93 and 95 as a backing singer. And interestingly enough, not Austrian born, Canadian. So yay to our friends up north. Iceland in the fourth spot. Belgium in the fifth. And like I'd mentioned before, this is a Dutch language song. This is put up by the Flemish broadcaster as opposed to the other Francophone structure of the rest of the competition. So at least they had a little bit of representation with that. Song number six, there is a bit of a story behind Boogaloo by Lotta Engberg for Sweden in song six. This, a rule that is still going on at the contest is you can't make your song a commercial entry. It should be commercial in terms of, you know, doing well in the charts, but it's not about advertising. The fact that Dami Im was able to say FaceTime in Sound of Silence, that was a rarity that she was able to sneak through. But
that was a masterpiece. That's why.
True. But yeah, Facebook, we know that that is just the social network song. Teo for Belarus in 2014, he had to change Google Maps to all the maps. And one of the earliest examples of this happening at Eurovision was the song Boogaloo, which was originally titled in Swedish, Fira Boog. Oh, in Coca-Cola. So four, and Boog is a chewing gum brand and a Coca-Cola. And it won Melody Festival in that way with no problems. And then the EBU at the time were like, nah, you got to switch it up. Can't do it. So Boogaloo and Rock and Rolla instead. So Lotta was, they had to pivot.
This was the first of a few different songs I noticed in the contest in terms of just like overall trends that seemed to have sort of a tropical influence to them.
In this year specifically, or just
in this year specifically, that there is a bit of a thing, and I was trying to think like what in pop culture was happening that may have popularized this just ever so slightly Caribbean sort of chill vibe that we had, and I couldn't figure it out. I did check. Kokomo came out in 1988, so it's not that.
Okay, so maybe Kokomo was influenced by
Eurovision.
By Eurovision.
Mike Love would never.
When did Caribbean Queen come out?
There's no way to know.
Is there just a vibe? Like Miami was big. Miami Vice was huge. The Golden Girls lived in Florida. It wasn't tropical. It was subtropical.
Caribbean Queen is 84. Actually.
Okay.
It was just kind of the vibe of the 80s. There was a neon and Caribbean aesthetic.
That's
just
fair.
The U.S. was pumping out. And if Sweden wants to get on that, fine.
I wanted to say it was the Jamaican bobsled team, but that was also 1988.
Oh, yeah.
Trendsetters, these guys.
I know. It's all because of those damn Swedes.
Mm-hmm.
What about the Lambada, the Forbidden Dance? Wasn't that a thing?
Oh, early 90s, I think. Oh, the Lambada.
Oh, yeah, that may have been.
Anyway, let's get out of here because Sweden's song this year just really blows. Like, I don't think. They're like, it's a little fun. I'm like, oh, it's just moms and dads standing around playing the steel drum. It's just kind of some weird stuff. That, like I said, a relic of the time. A lot of this is just, I don't know if it's specifically 87. I feel like it wasn't this way when we watched 89, when we watched the post-Celine year. Like, this was, it's so cheesy.
It's so
80s. Everything is so cheesy. Like, I can't even enjoy it as sort of like a hit parade from the time, because they just seem like people, a parody of itself, a parody of 80s music.
If this was playing on the TV in the background of Stranger Things, you'd think it was fake.
Oh, yeah, like somebody invented this just to be on Stranger Things. But it's like, no, this is just the kind of brainless rot that was happening. Like, it's... God, culture has always, pop culture has always sucked. Like, really, truly.
This was the decade of indulgence and.
God, yeah, maximalism. Nothing was, no self-awareness.
Just, you saw those shoulder pads. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Everyone is in very tight half lycra pants and then big shoulders. Big shoulders and like long flowy. Everyone is out here looking like Blanche from the Golden Girls. It's really crazy. That's the silhouette.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I've seen a photo of my mother around this time looking like a dead ringer from Alexia from Cyprus. Like that haircut. Like give her a pair of glasses. I'm pretty sure that yeah. was just like, I didn't that realize my mother was Cypriot.
Specifically.
Yeah. And she was like 25 at the time as well. And yeah.
Does your mother have a secret past you don't know about?
I mean, I don't know what was happening when I was two. I mean, like, my brain is...
She had a pop career that you never... She just didn't have the courage to tell you and your brother about.
I mean...
Robin Sparkles of New Jersey.
She has a musical background.
Oh my God, I mean, there are some sequences here where I'm like, this really does look like Let's Go to the Mall. Yeah. Who was the... It was a later act. Was it Yugoslavia? I don't think so.
Yes.
Who was the act that came out and it looked like The Breakfast Club? Like, someone who's in, like, a varsity jacket. Someone who's in,
Maybe
like,
Switzerland? Like a, Switzerland,
Switzerland. Yeah,
Switzerland,
it was
Switzerland at the end is a total just 80s dance party.
For real. It looks like Breakfast Club. Yeah.
Like, that's the perfect way to end this show in particular.
Yeah.
We just skipped like 15 songs. That's fine.
I mean, there are certainly connections to this contest specifically with other like iconic songs and acts of the late 80s and early 90s, and which actually brings us right to my next, the next song in the running order here. From Italy, Tozzi and Raff with Gente di Mare, like a beautiful, like classic song. But both of those songs, both of those artists independently wrote songs that ended up being hits for none other than Laura Branigan.
Oh, wow. So one is Gloria, one is Self Control.
Tozzi wrote Gloria and Roth wrote Self Control. Yeah.
Wow.
And like,
see, I knew Gloria. I knew Gloria was originally Italian, but that's this guy?
Those guys. Yeah. Those guys. And looking forward another couple of years, actually, I think the year after Eurovision, if you look in the background of the German act, Wind, one of the backing singers, I don't remember if this is Millie or Vanilli, but this is a young Rob Pilatus, who ended up becoming part of the infamous lip-syncing, Grammy-winning, and then rescinding act, was one of the backing vocalists for Wind. So
amazing.
This is an incredible, incredible year for just, wait, really? That guy?
Blink and you miss it.
Yes. Wow. Yes. All right. I'm just going to keep rolling down. Feel free to stop me if you have a talking point on any of these songs.
Oh, we'll get to my talking points.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And then we're going to have our rankings as well. So yeah. We got Nevada from Portugal, which was Terry Wogan's underrated pick. Nishtha Barco Avila. Patricia Krause with a bodice that was defying gravity. I'm actually rather jealous with No Está Solo for Spain. I can't remember. I could not find it in our group notes, but I know early on in our run, we did an episode on some of our favorite null pointers of all time. And I feel like the song in number 10, Sharkim Sevgi Üstüne, this song is about love, by Seyal Taner and Grup Lokomotiv for Turkey. I feel like that was one of the ones that was ranked high in our group. And also when we're talking about hairstyles, the Bride of Frankenstein look on one of the backing singers was truly...
So remind me, is this the one with like everyone in white fringe?
Yes.
Okay, that's this entire show though.
How could I? True, but this is the one where it's really intense.
Yes, nonstop choreo. Yes.
I was genuinely impressed how well they sang, given how frenetic they were moving. I was at Sale, the singer, and she's like literally jumping up and down while singing.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me wish that they actually had, you know, like earpiece, like headphone mics, instead of having to be dependent on the actual handheld mic. Because God only knows, this wasn't a year where choreography was done like it is now.
God, no.
And if you had put the 2025 equivalent of Sharkim Sevgi Üstüne on a Eurovision stage now, what would that look like? And how wild would those outfits be? I'm just going to let that question marinate in all of your brains.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Should we just keep on rolling?
Can't have Turkey without Greece. Oh, God.
Well, stop.
My note on this one is, what says any, like, just Greek cheese feta joke. Insert here. This song is the absolute paragon of what's going on this year, which is just a lot of not trying very hard pop cheesiness. It's so 80s. Listeners, if you're going to spend any time on this contest and have already heard Johnny Logan, just take a listen to Grease's song, and it'll give you a good firm grasp of what was going on in Eurovision in the late 80s. Ugh.
Following that, we had Marsha with a Rektop in the Wind for the Netherlands, Plastic Bertrand, Amour Amour for Luxembourg, Ricky's Only the Light for the United Kingdom, I believe the second to last Scottish act that we've had at the contest. We haven't had a Scot since 1988. And their 13th place that day was considered a failure by UK standards. I don't think Ricky has had any hits or any releases since then. I don't even know if he even has a full-on Wikipedia page. Like, it's there's not much to be said about Ricky, and I'm kind of curious about what happened to him.
Well, I hope he didn't lose that number.
All right. Christine Minier for France. Les mots d'amour n'ont pas de dimanche. My French is not very good. We've already talked about Vind from Germany, another returning act, and they would actually come back to Eurovision a couple years later. Second place in 85, and they'd come back in 1992.
This is a Ralph Siegel joint, by the way.
It is a Ralph Siegel joint. One of his most successful, really. Mm-hmm. Is this an ambition?
You know, that is the name that I was trying to remember when you said, isn't every episode of our Eurovision podcast about twinks? We did an episode on Ralph Siegel, not a twink.
True. Can confirm. Ralph Siegel.
You remember when we were in Liverpool, one of the only times I saw a car being permitted to come into the parking lot that would have been really nice to use. It had a German... It wasn't like a diplomat license plate, but it was like a German dignitary or something like that. And we're like, who the hell is this guy? Like, what in the world is going on that some German official is coming to check this out? And then I got into the press center and Ralph Siegel was sitting on one of the couches.
Just hanging out.
He was just there, yeah.
Just checking things out, surveying mm-hmm. his territory.
Yeah, it turns out you can do that when you're
here. When you're Ralph Siegel.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Next up, we had Alexia, another returning act. Representing Cyprus. She was part of the band that represented them in 1981, which I believe was their debut, followed by Sata Salama by Vicky Rosti for Finland. Again, fantastic hair.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I love that before this, Terry Wogan had a little comment about how, I believe his phrase was that Finland has never come within a reindeer's breath of a chance at this contest. And I feel like it's because he's also aware that Finland has been slighted, you know, a few times too often at the contest, especially this year. Surprised to see just how low on the table this song ended up completing.
They were maybe the first country to kind of establish themselves as Eurovision weirdos.
And not even particularly weird this year, but
no, this one isn't. But just generally speaking, they were doing all sorts of crazy stuff. Even early, really early.
Yeah, earlier on in this decade alone, they had done a song called Reggae OK, where they had actually had Finnish language reggae, followed the next year by Nukupomi in a song about nuclear war. So
our multi-episode Finland deep dive is going to be so good. We got to do it at some point.
They're such an interesting country because they don't seem to care about anything.
And sometimes it hits. Sometimes it really, really hits.
I am both surprised and not surprised that they've only won once.
Their time will come. Time will come.
Oh yeah, they're gonna get another one again. It won't take super long, I don't think.
Nah, just keep on being weird, Finland. You keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Next up, we have one of the original front runners, but in the end they didn't, in fifth place altogether. It was In Lille Melody by Banjo and Ann-Katrin Herdorf, followed by Hold Me Now, Johnny Logan. The man, the myth, the legend, his second win, his first win as a songwriter, and his second of three wins overall, if you count songwriting wins. I mean, the song was incredibly 80s, his presentation incredibly 80s, and yet timeless. Do we think that, you know, we'll go into our votes at the end, but do you think that the song holds up as solid winner? Even if it's not necessarily your personal favorite?
Yes, I do.
Yes. I think What's Another Year is vastly superior, but this one is obviously top three this year. Yeah.
Derek, what do you think?
It's wild to see a song like this having won in 87 and now like over 35 years later, we still have these exact types of songs coming that are basically like, we're breaking up and I'm sad. I mean, it's the same song as Tattoo, really. Like all these years later, like this kind of song is still making it and doing well and winning. Like there's something very, I don't know. There's an appeal.
He is helped by the contrast. I know that there's a bunch of ballads this year, but for some reason, whenever I think back on this contest, it is nothing but these sort of high energy, bombastic 80s pop jams. And let me tell you, where he was in the running order, it felt like he was the first person in about 10 contestants where he did not jog onto the stage like he's one of the competitors in that, you know, that like Crystal Light National Aerobics video.
Oh my god! Rounds on the internet every day.
That's everybody running out onto the stage to that is everyone. It's like exactly that tempo too. We are the champions, That is how it feels every single time. And then Johnny Logan is out here actually singing from the heart. He is aided by contrast, definitely.
Mm-hmm. It's something that's really sad to see. I feel like Ireland has lost that genuineness. I feel like that was big when they were having their run of like winners. Like you go back and you listen to those and you're like, oh yeah, that's a winning song. You can just tell. Like when he came out on stage and started singing, I was like, oh okay, I get it now.
There's a reason he's royalty.
Yeah.
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 Oh boy. And then these last two.
Sorry, guys.
Like, by the way, it is still 1987, and here's why.
But 1987, again, we're talking about Novi Fosli from Yugoslavia with Yasam za ples, I want to dance. But Yugoslavia had a run of a couple years where they were going really retro.
Yeah. Yeah, it was sort of that throwback, like to enjoying the classic little rock and roll bits. And I mean, it worked for a bit. 1990, they won, right? With a song not unlike that.
89, but yeah.
89, yeah.
Yeah, and then when they hosted, they had a similar kind of with the Tai Chi's "Hai de Ludiemo," very similar vibe. Silver Wings with Mangoop, similar kind of vibe. That very kind of retro, and yet. Those songs generally did very well for Yugoslavia at the time.
They did. For everyone, who did Let This Venga?
That was Norway in 85. Norway's first win.
Let me tell you, it was a thing. They really liked that.
The Venga bus.
Moms and dads really liked the old sock hop rock and roll sound. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense.
I mean, everything old is new again. Things happen in 30-year cycles. Like we were saying, that 90s style is coming back in 2025. So if you go 30 years back from 1987, that's 1957, is it not?
Uh-huh. Yep.
Things come in cycles and waves.
The people who now have the money want to feel nostalgic. So like...
we end our show with the previously mentioned Moitié Moitié for Switzerland by Carol Rich. I had read in another academic article that some would argue that Moitié Moitié is one of the only songs, other than when they sang in Romanche, to really feel truly Swiss. And the reasoning that they gave is that Moitié Moitié is a very Swiss phrase. It basically means like half and half, but it's specifically a type of fondue style, specifically from the Fribourg canton, where Carol Rich is from. That it's a mix of different kinds of cheeses that is only found in Fribourg. That Moitié Moitié is the thing.
You're going to say classically swish because all these guys are cuckoo.
What?
Derek, roll the laugh track.
Eric's taking care of it.
Yeah, okay. Oh,
yeah. And actually, if I remember correctly, I think I actually have another academic citation for that.
I was going to be like, actually, I have a Swiss cuckoo clock right here.
I went to at least one shop that sold them in Basel.
That's true.
Like, yes. How am I going to get this thing home?
Yes, it's... Anyway, that's chanson.
Okay, yeah, we've dragged the aesthetics of this contest, both oral and visual. So we've assembled the top five, each of us. Mm-hmm. Yes. It was Germany was second this year.
Yes, Germany was second with "Lass die Sonne in dein Herz." Let the sun in your heart.
I didn't give that song the time of day. I couldn't believe when it was racking up all the points at the end.
Honorable mention for me, to be honest. I like that.
Yeah.
It was fun.
It was cute. Again, that sunny Caribbean.
It's got the trot pop thing going.
Trot pop. Love it. Yeah. So we also have combined, or we asked our friends over on Patreon. We do have a Patreon if you are interested in supporting us on a monthly basis. And one of the benefits of Patreon is you get to take part in fun stuff like this. We asked our patrons what their favorites from the 1987 contest were, and we're going to combine those scores with our own to see what the actual true winner, according to 12 Points of America. All right. Who wants to start then from our quote-unquote jury vote with their fifth place? We'll do a top five for each of us. Who do we give one point to? Danny, why? Yeah, rip the Band-Aid off. Do it.
We're going to do each of us do our one pointers and then our two pointers. Or am I just rolling through my top five? All right.
The one point
who I thought was worthy of 1 point, because there's a lot that's not worthy of anything here. I gave one point to Amour Amour. I didn't hate Luxembourg's song this year at all. Gives me the vibe of if I were playing GTA Vice City, just driving down that central strip. If this comes on in the background, very moody. Some harmless light pop.
Lovely. Derek, what do you have as your fifth place?
My number five is Patricia Krause from Spain. I thought this was a really cool song. I thought it did a lot of interesting things with the music. I'm just going to say it. I loved her outfit. It looked like she was going to roundhouse kick a vampire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She did look pretty badass.
I thought this was a lot of fun. Not a fantastic song, but I thought I really enjoyed it. It stood out to me while going through it. So 1 point to you.
Eric, what do you think?
I gave a point to the showstopper, Switzerland. I just thought it is such a good like condensation of what's going on here.
Yeah.
An absolute dance party sort of a bop. I really, really was impressed by, I don't know. It's just really fun. There's this old show. This is really random, but there was a TV show called Dance Party USA in the late 80s. It was basically like Soul Train, but for white people in this period of time. And if you've never seen it, you should. And the bands would perform, right? They'd be lip syncing. Obviously, you know, it was a top of the pop sort of thing. And people would dance along in the most 80s way imaginable. And if you've never seen this young up and coming band who got asked to be on Dance Party USA called Nine Inch Nails.
Oh my God.
It is one of the funniest videos you will ever see. And it turned up some number of years ago, and even Trent Reznor was like, yeah, we were probably really drunk and somebody called and asked if we would do it. And we were like, oh, wouldn't that be funny? Yes, it would be funny, Trent. It was great. Anyway, that's what this song reminds me of, is Dance Party USA. It's just, if I'm going to enjoy 3 minutes of this ridiculous 80s just silliness, go all out. And that's what it does.
Well, speaking of silliness and going all out, I'm very, very happy. I'm very happy that I'm recording remotely away from Danny right now, because I'm going to do it. I'm throwing a point to Israel.
You are allowed to give 1 point to Israel. That's fine. Yes. That's fine.
The song, it's ridiculous. It is silly. It is of its time, but it's well sung. It's well performed. It's goofy, but well done goofiness. They're making fun of themselves rather than the contest, which is something that I hate. That's true. Yeah. It's, you know, come on. I'm a lazy bum. I have a cigarette on the balcony in the morning with my cup of coffee, and I just watch the world go by. Like, hoop. I get stuck in my head more often than I like to admit. So yes, damn it, I'm giving a point to Israel. Deal with it.
Are those guys comedians by trade?
I believe they are. Yeah, they were comedians.
I figured as much.
Yeah, or actors. Yeah, they were. So deal with it. Danny, who's your number two?
My number two is Italy. Don't hate these guys at all. That's some smooth, fine. What is it about Italy where even in a time period that is just so choked by cheese and smarminess, that there's still some genuineness. There's still some like legitimate effort, even at Eurovision this early. They have their trademark. It doesn't always work, but you can't say that Italy is not trying. You can never say Italy is phoning it in. These guys are okay.
And we have them to thank for Laura Branigan.
We sure do. We sure do.
Derek?
How did I pick for number two? Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, just kidding. I'm giving my number two to Vicky Roshti from Finland.
With her song, Sala Sanamalana da Dabat Sanamala.
Didn't realize you spoke Finnish.
My Terry Wogan impression, yeah.
I thought this was a lot of fun. Nothing crazy about it. I think Finland's been underrated for quite some time, and I do appreciate the fact that they are willing to not necessarily take risks, but just sort of do their own thing and be fine with it. There's a certain level of, I guess, ambivalence to how they end up doing, as long as they're having fun, and I appreciate that, and I could see that here.
Eric, who's your fourth place?
My fourth place is, this was one where I don't know that I really even expected much of anything. And then I was like, wait a minute, this actually kind of slaps. I went with Bang from Greece with their song, whatever it was.
Stop. Whatever it was, you're so right.
Stop.
Stop. No, it's, yeah, it just kind of banged. I also want to point out that, like, okay, so he went by the stage name Paul Stevens. Real exciting name. This guy's real first name was Thanos.
Ooh.
Hell yeah. Like, can't, yeah. So this guy wiped out half of all life and turned that into a, let's see, 10th place finish. Not about sure. Halfway through. It makes sense, as all things should be. Greece. I liked it.
Solid. In my fourth place, this is where I put Johnny Logan. Ireland. It's a beautiful song, beautifully sung, big anthemic. We've waxed poetic about the song already. We've done an entire episode on the man. There are just three songs that I just happen to appreciate more this year, but I can't downplay just how solid Hold Me Now was, and how iconic it is in the whole span of Eurovision. I mean, there's a reason they keep inviting the man back to contests, and it's an evergreen. So yeah, 2 points for me. To Ireland. Danny?
So my third place here is, I'm just going to be real quick with it, because if I get to talking about it, I'm going to spend 5 minutes on it. Belgium here, our hosts, sending in something really just interesting. This is called like Soldiers of Love. Am I calling that correctly? Just some high energy bombast here in a way that I actually like. Being performed by what looks like alternate dimension semi-goth Grace Slick, if she was a Belgian pop star. Just a big fan of kind of, it's just some ballsy, punchy pop music. Yeah.
And the guitars were guns.
The guitars were guns.
Derek, who's your bronze medalist?
My bronze medalist goes to Lighthouse X with the song Soldiers of Love.
Soldiers.
I'm sorry, no, it's the other one.
Love.
it's Belgium as well. This one, I think the thing that really shook me about this one is I was listening to the show and the first handful of songs, I was like, yeah, okay, this is 80s like crazy.
Yes, it sounds different, doesn't it?
And it kind of came out of nowhere, and there was like I stopped what I was doing and I actually paid attention to it, and I was like, oh, there's something really special about this. There was some choreography. It wasn't like sharp like we are accustomed to today. Mm-mm. But they were making an effort, and yeah, this one, I thought this was really cool. A really solid host entry.
Eric, what about you?
Israel.
Nice to know I'm not the only one.
You are not allowed to give this many points to Israel. Not for this. Not for this.
look, and I say this as someone who really did not like Espresso Macchiato, although it won me over a little bit in the arena. I understood. Derek's giving me this look like, you mother...
To me too. I'm just
it's a real shame you just moved into that house and about to burn it down with you.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Eric. Come on.
This is so weird. Like I don't know how far back joke entries go. I mean, that's such a loosely defined thing anyway. But I really think, especially in a contest that where there are so many things that are really, I'll be honest, samey, and just really, really 80s, that these guys just, it's a complete piss take.
You're not wrong.
Yes. And it got stuck in my head a little bit. It's so silly without being like, I didn't find it abrasive. That, I mean, it's a Weird Al Yankovic level of dancing going on when one person's singing and the other person's just being a wacky waving inflatable arm flailing tube man behind them and things like that. And then they go back to the chorus and it's just the simplest step touch choreography. I thought it was a legitimately well done gag of a thing.
It is a gag.
I honestly really enjoyed it. I cannot put it higher than third.
I appreciate your restraint.
But it's ridiculous. This is ridiculous. And I'm so glad it's there.
And which is a good segue to my third place, ridiculous, but I'm so glad it's there. In terms of, Derek used the word frenetic before, and it's the best word I can do for this. And it's, again, catchy and joyous. The song is super, super simplistic. It's about love. The song is so self-referential, which I normally hate, but it's Turkey. It's Şarkım Sevgi Üstüne. It's, I absolutely love it. It is catchy. It is wholehearted. It is unabashed. It's over the top. It's purely entertainment. It is choreography before choreography at Eurovision was really as embraced as it is now. Like we talked about Israel with their choreo, but this is nonstop entertaining, joyous, fun. And again, I get it head stuck more than I like to admit. I have actually had very strange dreams where I am somehow cosplaying as a member of this group. It is terrifying, and yet I wake up smiling. Yeah, I probably just told way too much. A nightmare where
you tried to claw yourself out of a white leather couch, and so that's just how you the
look. Like, where'd all this fringe come from?
God.
But yeah, I love it. No shame. No shame. No points. How the hell did it get no points?
Yeah, you know, no points.
But you know what, Turkey? You get three from me. So, you know, a little bit of justice there. All right, Danny, who's your runner-up for 1987?
Vicky Rosa, it is Finland. I really liked it. And I like her as a singer. There was an issue with Norway right away, where her song sounded fine enough. But Norway's singer just sort of like, I really don't want to be too mean, but it's been a week or so since I was on the podcast. So here we go. The singer for Norway has zero stage presence. And the way that she works the camera is almost like a fourth grader being there, having their picture taken on picture day at school. It's really unfortunate. Some of the shots that we get of that poor girl. But Finland is exactly the opposite. Finland is staring dead in the camera, and she still is so like alive. She's still so in the song, and the song is not bad at all. Love a good shot of her staring down the camera while just lime green lasers are shooting behind her. Real fun stuff.
Derek, who's your runner-up?
I'm going with Terry Wogan on this one. It's Nevada from Portugal. We talked about this when we reviewed 1976. And I was like, God, how did Portugal go so long before they won? Because they have their own thing.
It's a mystery.
So well. I know. And it's still very 80s, but at the same time, you get that artistry that they're sort of known for. Mm-hmm. Like, just really beautiful. Mm. Yeah, not a lot to say about it other than, yeah, it really stood out to me. Kind of genuine and heartfelt and sad, as the Portuguese do.
As the Portuguese do.
I think it's just fantastic. It is crazy to me to think like they've been in this contest so long and they only won the one time.
Eric?
Oh, it's me. My second place is... Oh, let me double check. Okay, that's what I thought. Italy.
Okay, yeah.
God bless you, sea people. They tend to be so timeless. They tend to really feel just class. You're class. These guys' voices don't blend especially well together, and it's still... That's another Italian thing, I feel like. They'll get two singers that don't go good together at all, and somehow they make this magic. Like, I don't know how else to explain it.
Yeah, I mean, they still do. And Mahmoud and Blanco.
Mm-hmm. The
Metamoro.
Yeah, the Novo Niente one.
Novo Viete Fatto Niente, yeah.
That one, yeah.
You could say Anna Oxa and Fausto Leal with the mm-hmm. Avrei Voluto back in the 90s. Yeah, this is a thing for them.
Mm-hmm. This is a really good example of it. Italy just always sends really nice, not always, but they tend to send just pure class. And it's a good sound. Really, really nice.
Again, it's a really nice segue for me because Italy is also my silver medalist. Woo-hoo! For this one. I absolutely love it. Fun fact, this song was also translated into Icelandic and is now one of Iceland's most enduring Christmas carols. Called Komdu of Jólin, and it's actually, I believe, sung by another Eurovision alum, Gunnar Olsson, who was part of Sioni's Friends. But yeah, this is timeless. It's universal, and it's now a Christmas carol in Icelandic. The only reason I think that I couldn't put it as number one for me, and I love this song. It's beautiful. It's genuine. It does that Italian thing where it puts slightly too many syllables into a line, but it still works anyway. The only thing that I knocked it down for is the fact that, like so many Italian songs, the original version is slightly longer and it flows better. The actual studio version of this is a 4-minute long song. And you can tell
that's Italy, baby.
Yeah. And you can tell that it's been snipped and neutered slightly.
I thought you were going to say you have to dock it points because of the hair.
No, that's, I mean, I would dock you 2 points for the edit and then add a point for the hair.
You know when Beast turns back into a person at the end of Beauty and the Beast? It's that hair. That's little more blonde, but that's okay. The hair.
Danny, number one. What do you got?
It's Ireland. What do you got, Derek?
It's Ireland.
Yeah. Eric, what do you got? Say Germany. Somebody say Germany. These people came in second and we've given them nothing. Did we all think it's crap?
Derek, what were you going to say?
It's obvious. It's one of those things when you go back and you listen to it. I did, like, again, 1976 when we heard Save Your Kisses for Me. Didn't really think much of it until I saw it. I was like, okay, I get it now.
Mm-hmm.
There's no other winner.
It's Ireland for me too. And I really didn't think it was going to be. And then you hear, well, first you hear some of the other songs, but then you hear this and you're like, oh yeah, no, this, it at the risk of insulting 21 countries at once, this feels like the song that was trying.
It has a, like a cut, like not to be mean, but like a Hollywood level of accomplishment to it. The way that he sings this song is like, he's performing it as a best song nominee at the Oscars. Like it feels very American. It feels very slick.
Yeah. It's just so professionally done. I feel like he looks younger in this than he did seven years earlier.
The styling. Yeah, the styling.
Yeah.
He's 7 years older than his 1980 win.
He's wearing a NASA astronaut suit, too.
And I'll point out something that Elise, one of our patrons and voters, noted, how he just kind of ad-libbed and hugged his way through the background singers in the reprise was just very, very nice. It is the best song from this year. It's that simple. Sam?
Well, you know, I've already given my point to Ireland, so I don't have this as my number one. I gave this to Finland.
Okay.
Oh. Yes, Sata Salama. So, for me, it's enduring. It's very of its time, and yet it's still so good. I think she sang the hell out of it. Even at the end of it, we were saying before the song Terry Wogan had basically said, yeah, Finland isn't, you know, they're not even in the mix. They're never, even at the end of the song, he's like, she sang the heck out of that. And it just, for me, it just hits my ear in just the right spot. This for me is the epitome of Finland in the 80s, which was frankly a golden age for them at this contest. So I gave them my five, but I fully recognize that Ireland is incredibly solid, like I said. So just to summarize our points here, 1 point apiece went to Switzerland, Spain, and Luxembourg, 2 to Greece, Turkey gets 3 points, Israel and Portugal both get 4, Belgium gets 6 points, Italy gets 10 with our bronze medal, Finland edging them out 11 points for second place, and then Ireland at the number one spot, 17 points. But what did our friends over on Patreon say?
Let me just give you the top five here, because there's a pretty big drop off after the top five. I will note all 22 countries got points.
Wow.
That's impressive.
Yeah, that never happens.
Wow.
Ever. But it happened this time. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Fifth place went to Portugal. Good. You know, we talked about that one a bit. Fourth place to Turkey, 33 more points than it got in the real contest, which is to say that it got 33 points. 34 points to our third place finisher, Finland. 35 points to our second place finisher, Italy. And they picked Ireland number one.
Yeah.
By a decent margin. But top three, not quite the same order, but the same three countries.
We have taste. All right. We should probably wrap this up. But again, if you're just joining us from the pod crawl, we are so, so happy that you did join us. Stay tuned for the next pod crawl stop, which, like I mentioned before, is going to be over with our friends over at That Eurovision Site, covering Denmark 1964. Let's hear a little snippet of what they have to say.
Welcome to That Eurovision Site, a podcast about Eurovision with a slice of life.
We will be discussing Eurovision 1964, which is the first year that Denmark hosted following their win in 1963.
The vocals were just gorgeous, and the song itself, like, it reminded me of that sort of Disney classic.
You are never going to be able to get a non-political event when you are inviting people to represent countries, because they are an inherently political thing.
I literally wrote down on my notes, I forgot this was there.
You can find us on all the standard social media outlets at 12pointsUSA. Just email us directly at 12pointsfromamerica@gmail.com. You can find us, like we said, over on Patreon if you'd like to support us with a monthly contribution. We appreciate you either way, if you support us or not. Patreon supporters do get exclusive content and early access to episodes, and, you know, they vote on episodes like this. We will catch you at our next episode. Thank you so, so much for joining us. Check out the pod crawl if you haven't already. Until next time, everybody, I've been Samantha.
I've been Derek.
I've been Eric.
And I have been Danny.
You have. And America and the world.
Stop listening now.
Stop listening now. Stop listening
Don't cry.
Now. We'll be back in a couple weeks, I assume.